This is Positive Parenting. Parenting expertise and advice from best-selling parenting author and national newspaper columnist, Mr. Dad, Armin Brott.
Hey there, welcome to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. Something has gone wrong in your relationship with your kid. You can't put a finger on it. You're not quite sure when it happened. You're not sure how it happened. But you know that you want to make your relationship right again as soon as possible. There's only one problem. You haven't got a clue what to do. So you coach yourself. Stay optimistic. It's just a phase. It'll pass. Be positive. You cross your fingers and hope for the best. Unfortunately, though, thoughts like that offer little comfort. When your relationship with your kid is out of whack, hope just doesn't cut it. In fact, having relationship problems with your child can somehow make everything in your life seem just off. And you spend many sleepless nights feeling brokenhearted and lost. Hey, don't feel bad. We have all been there. Parenting, as much as we love it, is a messy business. It's filled with unexpected turns and twists. And sometimes you just need some new skills to overcome those problems, and fast. Even the most devoted parents can feel totally flummoxed by their kids. And that can give the kids the opportunity they were looking for, and roles can get switched. In this part of today's show, we're going to be talking about what happens next, which is when kids call the shots. I'm Armin Brott. It all starts when Positive Parenting continues right after this.
More with Mr. Dad, Armin Brott, after this. From the MrDad.com radio network.
It's Practical Polly Radio. I've switched to cooking with healthier oils. So now what do I do with all these tubs of lard? Skinny jeans feeling too tight? A bit of lard on your hips and thighs, and those pants slide on like a dream. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils, like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Hey, welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott, and my guest for this part of today's show is Sean Grover, who is the author of When Kids Call the Shots, How to Seize Control from Your Darling Bully and Enjoy Being a Parent Again. Sean, great to have you on. How are you?
Thank you for having me, Armin. It's great to be here.
All right, let's talk about the Suffering Parents Club. And what is that? That's one of you start off the book with that. And so set the stage for us a little bit.
Well, the Suffering Parents Club, eventually we all become members of it, because I think you grow up with this, you get married and you're going to have kids, and there's sort of a future laid out before you, but truly we're never prepared for parenting. No matter how many books you read, how you prepare, it just sort of hits you, and you have to learn everything the hard way.
Yeah, there was a great quote from years ago that I remember. Actually have incorporated this into my books, and I actually use it as a line when I'm teaching classes for expectant fathers. A woman was asked to describe the difference between the way everybody told her parenthood was going to be and the way that it actually turned out to be. And she said, it's very simple. It's like the difference between watching a tornado on TV and having one tear the roof off your house. So there you go. Yes, you're absolutely right. You can read anything you want, and then you have to deal with your own tornadoes.
Oh, man, that is so true. And, you know, as a therapist who works with children and families, I really felt I had this all under control. You know, I had all the answers, ran all these workshops and spoke at schools and wrote articles about parenting. But, boy, when I became a parent, the tides really turned.
Yeah, it's easier to be a parent when you don't have kids.
Oh, absolutely, because you can send them home.
Yeah, which is what grandparents do. You get a chance to do that later. So what happens? I mean, what kind of bullies are we talking about? And how is it that parents slip into this kind of letting the kids run roughshod over them?
That's right. Well, if we really look at it, parents usually ask me three questions. They'll ask, is bullying, is this natural? Or, you know, how did it get started, and what do I do about it? Those are the three most popular things I hear in my office. In terms of, is this natural? Absolutely. Nature puts parents on a collision course with their children. So if you really look at the way kids develop and learn, and a lot of it is based on frustration, mastery, and then maturity. So every time a child confronts a frustrating situation, let's say go really young and say learning to walk, right? Very, very frustrating. Parents helping them, starting to learn to walk or starting to eat with a spoon, very, very frustrating. Can't find your mouth. Most of the food is on the floor. But as they work through this frustration and then they master it, they find their mouth, they can suddenly walk. The next thing they want is independence. They don't want to hold your hand. They don't want your help. And they start to push you away. So that's a very healthy drive. The difficulty is at that age and different phases in childhood, they don't know what's dangerous, what could get them into trouble. So they get almost intoxicated on this idea of being independent, doing things on their own. And then as a parent, you have to step in to protect them. Now, they don't realize that. They just think you're spoiling their fun. You know, what are you doing? Why are you stepping in? I'm having a good time here. So right there is a conflict that's just built in through every phase of child development.
And so how do you deal with that as a parent? I mean, that's nothing you can do can change that.
That's right. That's right. So the first thing to deal with it, I always ask parents to abandon the idea that this was supposed to be easy, that there aren't supposed to be conflicts and there aren't supposed to be these power struggles. They're built in. So it's not why is this happening, it's how can I manage this better? So if a parent, when I see parents get very frustrated, and I'm sure you know this, I've lived through it, I revisit it pretty regularly, you know, you begin to become just as impulsive, just as punishing or mean as maybe your kid is at that age. You sort of regress to that position. And at that point, you're out of your parenting role, which is really what the book is about, where parents surrender their leadership of the family or their child and begin to become too reactive and too impulsive and not model the kind of behaviors that they're expecting.
But I'm curious here, I mean, how you get past being able to understand that at an intellectual level and then actually do something about it.
Yeah, you know, you said a mouthful. That is, you know, the first three chapters of the book, I really ask parents to do a personal inventory. Because what inspired me to write this book is when I was struggling, I have a bookshelf full of parenting books. When I was really in the deep, you know, pits of despair, I felt these parents' books were written in some other language. I just couldn't get some of the phrases I was supposed to say out of my mouth. And what I realized is this is great for someone else, but it's really not built on my identity, my history, the kind of parenting I received, the kind of parents I had, my particular culture. So in the first chapter or two of the book, we don't talk about the problem with your kid. We talk about where are you from? What kind of parenting did you receive? What were the strengths of the parenting you received? Your mother and father's lighter abilities? What were their darker ones? Where were they heavy? What are you repeating? And where could you make new choices? So we really climb inside the parent's history. Because you know, and I'm sure you've experienced it, most parents, at some point, you hear things your parents say come spilling out of your mouth.
Oh, yeah.
In the heat of a moment. And it may not be the best choice. So we really have to do a personal inventory in terms of where you are emotionally. A lot of parents come in suffering from parent burnout. They're not even aware of it. Or as a couple, they're no longer working in unity, which is an absolute disaster when raising children. So we really want to look at all the all those elements. Because if we can, it's kind of like tuning your instrument. If you tune your instrument, you can play many different songs or things on it. But if the instrument's out of tune, no matter what you do, it's not going to sound quite right. So we really want to start with where the parent's at, what's going on in their life, the stressors, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Then once we get them in tune, we can turn to new ways of managing frustration or being with their kids.
Well, before we get to that, give us a couple of examples of questions that we might be asking ourselves that will help us to get into the right mindset to move beyond.
Beyond
the self-inventory and into the actually doing something with the child. So what do we need to do to start this process of self-exploration? I mean, what kinds of questions do we ask ourselves?
Well, first, I'd really want to. I ask parents, if I do workshops, I often ask them to close their eyes and imagine themselves at their child's age. And where were they emotionally? What were they going through? What were their fears? What were their insecurities? If you have a kid in middle school, where were you in middle school? What were you? And the stories that pour out of them, very dramatic stories, that we seem like a teenager once said to me. He said, what's with grown-ups? You know, when you become a grown-up, you forget what it's like to be a kid. You know, and that had a really powerful impact on me. And if I spent time with those years, I think, oh, my God, I was so insecure. I was so overwhelmed. Last thing I needed was a parent adding by being critical or negative or, you know, adding to the voices that I carried with me. So, one, we want to look at the age of your child and then spend some time of where they are. And know what's normal, what's normal, healthy frustration, and how you can manage it with your kid without punishing or shaming or guilting. These are all the imprints that are going to take root if we go that way.
Is there a particular type of parent or a particular type of worldview or type of having been parented in a particular kind of way that sets you up for being more of a victim than others?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, in the book, we talk about three different kinds of parenting styles that can really promote bullying in children. You know, the first one is the guilty parent. Guilty parent is a great parent, but something's gone wrong. Either a divorce, separation. There may be financial hardships. There may be an illness. The child is sick or the parent's gotten sick. But something has really thrown life, sort of a curveball has come their way. And generally, they feel really guilty about that. So they tend to be overindulgent of their children. They try to ease their own guilt by making up for, by giving more and sort of surrendering to the child's bullying because it feels good to reward your kid because it relieves your own guilt. And it seemingly buys you a moment of peace. So the guilty parent is something I see very often. The second parent is the anxious parent.
Wait, now, Sean, hang on just a second. We need to take a quick break, and we'll pick up right there.
Okay.
I'm talking with Sean Grover, who's the author of When Kids Call the Shots, How to Seize Control from Your Darling Bully and Enjoy Being a Parent Again. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll pick right up and talk about the second and third kinds of parents that you're setting yourself up for trouble. I'm Armin Braun. You're listening to Positive Parenting.
Excuse me, do you know how to get to Maine and Maple?
How's that cook?
How do you change the ringtone?
How much does this cost?
Does this bus stop at Elm Street?
We ask questions everywhere in life, except...
Any questions?
No.
At the doctor's office, ask questions.
What is this test for?
Are there any side effects?
Questions lead to better health care. Go to ahrq.gov for a list of 10 questions everyone should know. Questions are the answer. Public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. If you're just joining us, talking with Sean Grover, who's the author of When Kids Call the Shots, How to Seize Control from Your Darling Bully and Enjoy Being a Parent Again. I love that phrase, your darling bully. Sean, so we were just talking about a couple of, you said there are three different kinds of parents that are kind of likely to become victims of their own child's bullying, and we don't mean in, you know, the horrible kind of way that you hear about. But so you talked about the first one being the guilty parent, and then
second one would be the anxious parent.
Okay.
Now, this is someone who's probably anxious in their life. When you become a parent, you take all those insecurities or immaturities. Everything comes with you into parenting. So you enter into this new identity, but you bring along all your old baggage. So the anxious parent, constantly worrying about their kid, hovering over the kid, micromanaging the kid. And with a child, if your parent is always worried about you or always concerned about you and expressing that, they get very angry because that anxiety comes across to the child like, you don't believe in me, you don't trust me, you don't think I'm a capable person. So they start pushing back right away. That's the second one. And the third one would be one of my favorites, which is the fix-everything parent. This is the kind of parent just wants to fix stuff. They don't really want to know. They don't want to understand. They just want to fix it. So what happens if a child gets frustrated and it's working through a problem to its own solution, which is really going to fuel their maturity, the parent is more likely to jump in there and fix it for them, which increases dependency on the parent, but then triggers enormous frustration because the child wants to be independent at the same time.
I want to ask you a question. So I eventually, at some point, you know, I do a lot of these interviews, so sometimes it becomes family therapy for me. But I was just at my sister's house a couple of days ago, and she, I think, is falling into your category of guilty parent. She's a widow, but I guess about a year ago. And her son, who's 9 years old, is an absolutely brilliant child. And there's this scene. She's saying, we need to get ready to go. They're going to a synagogue. And so he's wearing shorts. And she says, you got to put on long pants. And he's saying, no, I'm not going to put on long pants. I'm going to be too hot in there. I'm not going to do it. And she says, look, you got to do it. That's the way that it is. And he says, is there some kind of a problem here? Do we have a problem here? Yeah, and I'm sitting there.
Like this kid a lot.
Yeah. And then she says, I cannot believe that you are going to speak to me so disrespectfully. And he says, I will if I have to. And I thought, Mike, I write a lot of books about parenting. I'm supposed to have something to say about this. But I was just so floored by the mouth on him. And she then lets him go without, you know, having to change his clothes. And this is, you know, the ultimate, I mean, this happens all the time, basically. They're just scene after scene like this. And she gets totally steamrolled. And part of it, I think, is because of the guilt. I mean, that's the father, the husband that died is not the father of that child. But they lived together in the same house for a couple of years. And so what do you do with somebody like that?
Well, when you were describing that story, with a guilty parent, there's always this sort of pleading in their voice. Please just do what I'm asking of you, please. And you can feel the power shift in the dynamic, right? That she's almost asking him to cooperate from a place as if he's going to decide to cooperate or not. So in that situation, I'd really want to look at a little bit more of the temperament of the child. If he tends towards anxiety or oppositional, the last thing you want to do is spring things on him at the last minute, because the answer will be no. So I'd really want to see, I want to know what happened the night before, if they could have prepared together the night before. I've had great success with kids that are really getting into these battles with their parents. The parents inviting friends over, child's friends and their friends, to go to the synagogue or to the event together, because kids in front of other kids, in front of other parents, will rarely have that kind of showdown moment. So I want to strengthen her, too. If we can get her in touch with, you know, is she aware that she's doing this, that she's feeling guilty? If we can get those feelings out, I'd really want to work on empowering her more. Because just from the Lydia you told me, I can sense her sense of guilt.
Well, there's guilt, and then also the kid he's kind of like a cult leader personality. He walks into a room and he knows everybody within seconds, and he's, as I said, he's just literally brilliant. And she, she doesn't want to stifle that. But she's picking an odd way to reinforce his behavior.
Well, the thing is, you can't be a good parent without making unpopular decisions. And I find a lot of parents are sort of afraid of their kids. They're afraid of the meltdown. They're afraid of them getting angry. But to do this, kids don't come with limits, structure limits and boundaries, these kind of psychic frameworks that help us to manage our feelings and our relationships and our place in the world. They don't come with those. They need to be taught. And where you have structure, it's going to lower anxiety. So, I recall working with a kid, I'll call him Derek, he was in one of my groups, and everyone thought Derek had just the life of a dream life, because he had no curfew. They didn't check his homework. He was out at all hours. One day he didn't show up to the group. It was a teen group, and everyone was going on about Derek's life. And I said, "Well, how about I talk to your parents and get you the same deal? I'll get you all those freedoms, everything." "Oh, that's never going to happen, blah, blah, blah." And I said, "Well, come on, I can make parents do almost anything." And yeah. One kid, young girl says, "Well, my mother would never do that." I said, "Why not?" She said, "Because she loves me."
Ooh.
So the idea there is that limits are love. Kids crave them, they fight against them, but when you set them and you're firm, you'll notice their behavior gets better incrementally over time, sometimes within 24 hours.
So you're not in the camp that is saying that it should be an equal partnership between kids and parents. I mean, somebody has to take
dominant.
Okay, right.
Yeah, just absolutely
Want to make sure. So how do we set up a situation at home where the parent can still be the one in charge, or the one who has the final say on things, or the grown up in the relationship at least, and the kid still has enough limits to be able to bounce up against, but also enough freedom to explore and to grow and develop?
Absolutely. Well, this is your nephew we're talking about?
Yes.
I love those kind of kids. They're a little mouthy. They have great people skills. They're really assertive, but they can be a real pain in the neck, depending on the adult. So we want to find a way of getting them to cooperate without oppressing that personality. Because that kind of moxie, that spunk, that's going to do him well in life. But if he doesn't know how to cooperate, if he doesn't know how to listen, or if he isn't flexible, that very quality that I love so much will doom him. So we really have to look in terms of their relationship. These family meetings that people have, I always thought they were just so corny, but I found them to be really effective. I asked parents to really say, you know, as a family, we've been doing this, and I think as a family we need to do this. And then you can have a dialogue about it where he does have a voice, but the ultimate decision lies with his mother. Now, they may have a showdown, and it may be a necessary showdown, but for things to continue the way they are, I'm a little worried, because that would affect how this is the imprint for relationships, and it's unrealistic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I'll tell you, part of the reason I'm so intrigued by this is because he reminds me a lot of one of my own kids, who is also brilliant and mouthy. And I remember telling her on a couple different occasions, and I'm glad this didn't actually happen, but I said, "Look, you know, one of these days, you're going to mouth off like that to somebody else, and you're going to get smacked. I mean, somebody's going to pop you in the mouth. Not going to be me, but somebody's going to do it." It never happened, and she has somehow made it through life okay. But I'm kind of wondering, you know, is he setting himself up for that one of these days, that somebody's just going to really, he's sweet and he's nice and he's funny, but, you know, that only gets you so far.
Well, yeah, that kind of personality has to learn everything the hard way. So he may have to get some lumps along the way before he learns how to contain himself a little bit.
Talking with Sean Grover, who is the author of When Kids Call the Shots, How to Seize Control from Your Darling Bully and Enjoy Being a Parent Again. Sean, have you got a website people can take a look
at?
Sure,
it's very easy. It's seangrover.com.
Okay.
The book is available on the website. It's available at independent bookstores, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. And everything we talk about in this interview is also on the site, parenting videos, parenting articles. It's all free, and it's there for members of the Suffering Parent Club.
Well, excellent. Thank you very much, Sean. Great to have you.
Thank you very much, Armin. Take care.
Driving has a rhythm all its own. Don't wreck it with a text. Before you get behind the wheel, silence your phone. Or better yet, designate a texter. For more text-free driving tips, visit stoptextstopwrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. You know, I get a question pretty much every summer, right about the same time, and it deals with issues having to do with water safety. So I wanted to share that one with you now. Dear Mr. Dad, my 4-year-old twins are crazy about swimming or floating or doing pretty much anything in and around water. On one hand, I'm thrilled. I swam in high school and college, and I'm looking forward to having them follow in my footsteps. On the other hand, I'm scared. I'm a stay-at-home mom, and there is no way I can keep an eye on them every second. How do we make our house water safe? Well, you're absolutely right to be scared. Keeping an eye on one child is hard enough. The fact that they outnumber you now and can head off in different directions makes your situation especially challenging. Being in the water, whether we're swimming or wading or just splashing around, can be wonderful fun, especially for little kids. But those same activities and anything else you could possibly do around water can also be extremely dangerous. Every year, about 375 children under the age of 15 drown, according to the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission. About 280 of those are under 5, and 95% of those deaths happen in swimming pools. Another 4,100 children under 5 end up in hospital emergency rooms every year with what the CPSC euphemistically calls non-fatal submersion incidents. Sometimes the result is permanent brain damage. The only way to keep children from drowning or being injured around water is to keep them far, far away from it, but that's just not practical. Nevertheless, there are a few things you can do to reduce the risks. Here are some general guidelines. We'll get to specific pool-related steps right after that. First of all, watch your kids and everyone else's closely when they're playing near any unfenced water-filled area. That includes pools or spas or bathtubs or even big puddles. Kids can drown in less than an inch of water. Never allow them in the water or into a boat without a life preserver. Life preservers should have a flotation collar that keeps the head upright and the face out of the water. Learn CPR, cardiopulmonary resuscitation. Also, always, always keep your phone nearby, and before you or anyone else gets into a pool or the open water, have an emergency action plan. Know how to get help and what to do until it arrives. Here's some spool and paw tips. Teach your kids to swim. Now is the perfect time to start, but don't make the mistake of thinking that once they can swim, it's okay to leave them alone. It's not. Never throw your child into the water or let anyone else do it either. It may be fun, but it's also disorienting and can be dangerous, especially for small kids. If you have a pool at home, put a fence at least 4 feet high around it. Use self-closing, self-latching gates and put the hardware at adult height. Anyone watching your child around a pool should know how to swim. Sounds obvious, but you'd be surprised. Always make sure that children with long hair either wear a bathing cap or pin their hair up. Hair can get sucked into drains and drown a child faster than you might think. If a drain cover is missing or broken, stay out of the pool until you replace the cover. In the off-season, cover and lock your hot tub and keep your pool covered too, even if it's empty. Falling into an empty pool can be just as dangerous as falling into a full one. Check the cover for puddles, too. Empty baby pools after every use and store them upside down to dry. And finally, enjoy your summer. If you've got a question or a comment for us here at Positive Parenting, please do send it over. You can drop us a line, as you probably know, through our website, MrDad.com. We'll be back next week with another Parents at Play segment or an Ask Mr. Dad segment. Hey, but don't go away quite yet, because there's more Positive Parenting coming straight at you.
More with Mr. Dad, Armin Brott, after this. From the MrDad.com radio network.
All right, class. Let's hear what everyone did this weekend. Jill?
Well, I raised my older sister to a big oak tree. It was at least 100 years old. My mom said I must have set a record or something. And then we went down by a stream and perched up on this huge rock and saw all these little minnows swimming around way below us. And then I rescued my little brother from an evil slug king who was guarding him at the bush fortress. And my sister and I brought him back to our super twig fort for safety. And then we all laid out and told stories until it got dark. And the Big Dipper led us all the way home.
Awesome.
Where were you, Jill?
Yeah.
We went to the forest. It's not that far away. Anyone want to come this weekend?
Ask your parents to take you and your friends to the forest this week and find the fun, adventurous you. It's closer than you think. Check out discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Now, get ready for more positive parenting with Armin Brott from the MrDad.com radio network.
Hey there, welcome to the second part of today's Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. Heather Gibbs Flett and Whitney Moss have known each other for a long time. When they were pregnant, they actually shared the same obstetrician, and they had their babies a little bit less than 9 months apart. After those babies showed up, they shared the experience of first-time motherhood, learning about their new sons and about their new selves. They even share an affinity for tracking things, and motherhood has provided a whole new world of things to count and record: pounds of baby, ounces of milk, hours of sleep, weeks of life, and minutes of crying. In 2005, they were both working part-time, and they spent the rest of their days caring for their first babies. But they noticed that those babies never suggested anything interesting to do. They never said, "Hey, Mom, let's go buy you some nice jeans and a latte." Well, Heather and Whitney started writing down their own ideas for fun things to do, with their babies in tow. They lived just a couple of miles apart from each other, and they actually were able to do a lot of those things together. Ultimately, they put together a website called RookieMoms.com. And it was meant to share their inspirations and their adventures with other moms, and of course some dads too. In this part of today's show, we're going to be talking with Heather Flett about the website, about parenting, about motherhood, about her books, and a lot of other stuff. You're not going to want to miss any of it. So stay right where you are. I'm Armin Brott, and you're listening to Positive Parenting.
Hands can do incredible things. This is the sound of 326 hands playing Mozart. This is the sound of 10,942 hands showing appreciation. 64 hands building a house for the homeless. 142 hands swimming a triathlon. 18 hands winning the big game. And this is the sound of two hands helping to save a life. It's called hands-only CPR. And it's recommended by the American Heart Association. If an adult suddenly collapses, call 911, then push hard and fast in the center of their chest until help arrives. It's incredibly easy and effective. Hands can do incredible things, but nothing compares to using them to help save a life. Find out more about this latest method of CPR at handsonlycpr.org. A message from the American Heart Association and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. My guest for this part of today's show is Heather Flett, who's the author of several books. One of them is called The Rookie Mom's Handbook, and the other one is Stuff Every Mom Should Know. And she's also got a website, RookieMoms.com. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. Hi.
So tell us a little bit about Rookie Moms and where this idea came from. I mean, it's kind of, you know, there are mom bloggers and things, but you guys have kind of, you and your writing partner, Hillary, right?
Whitney.
Whitney. God. Yeah. Okay, sorry.
That's okay.
Have kind of carved out a good spot for yourselves.
Well, when I found myself pregnant, just like a lot of women, I was pretty freaked out. And my best friend at the time, Whitney Moss, was ahead of me by 6 months. So I thought she just knew everything. In fact, I found myself pregnant on my honeymoon and called her from Africa, completely freaked out. Help. Oh my God, I'm pregnant. And she's like, "Well, I got pregnant in Berkeley, so I don't know how to help you." So that was sort of the beginning of our journey together as being
What does that even mean?
Which part?
Got pregnant in Berkeley. Everybody gets pregnant in Berkeley.
Lots of people get pregnant in Berkeley, but yeah. I got pregnant 1 month into my honeymoon in Europe and then found out in Africa, and I was
Okay.
Maybe more freaked out than your average person who's... anyway, so when she had her baby, I was very curious, knowing that my own was only 6 months after, and I thought I watched her obsessively, helped her learn new things, and yet when I had my first baby, I was surprised that they ate more than three times a day. So I was like really having, what do they call it, mother shock from the whole experience. So she took me under her wing, and we, being nerdy list makers that we are, wrote down a brainstorm list of things you can do when you still have a baby in tow. And we split it up, and she kind of handled the what you can do with a 6 to 12-month-old, and I took the newborn to 6 months, and we just brainstormed this list and put it in a shared spreadsheet, and this is the kind of friends we were. So my husband suggested that we put it in a blog format and share it with other people, and that's what we did. So RookieMoms.com started almost 10 years ago for us to document the fun things that we could do with our babies, and we tried to come up with a suggestion for every day of the year. And that's how it all started for us. And then our babies did the thing they do, which is they grow.
They grow, yeah. So then so then what happens? Have you evolved beyond the babies?
Right, we did. We evolved. And so what started as RookieMoms.com became a hyper-local website for us in the Bay Area called 510families.com. So parents of not just mom gender, but all families of all ages can find fun things to do with their kids. And then we went and had more babies, and we wrote two books. So it's been a journey with my best friend the whole time, but for about 10 years doing different things, but kind of all on the built on the foundation of sometimes being a home alone with your baby is boring and lonely.
Yeah.
And yeah. So we're always trying to kind of put a positive yet really realistic take on the whole thing.
So, you know, you're familiar with some of my books, and
yeah, absolutely.
There's some new editions coming out in just a couple of weeks, and one of them is a 20th anniversary edition, which I say, and I feel horribly old when I say that. But one of the things that, you know, people are interviewing me about it a little bit, and what's changed over the 20 years since I first wrote the Expectant Father? And I'm kind of curious, and you've got half that time, but
that's
there's
right.
still a lot of time changes, 10 years. Have you noticed that there have been a lot of things that you look back now and say, how did I ever write this? I mean, who would ever suggest that you do something, you know, whatever, with a baby now?
That's a great question, and I don't think that we look at our earlier suggestions and think, who would ever suggest that? But like, I think within the first year, one of our suggestions was email your baby. Set up an email account for your baby, and you can write messages like, you know, you gave me your first smile today, made the whole first 6 weeks worth it, or you wouldn't believe the diaper explosion you had. So kind of that sort of thing seems almost primitive now, because probably babies have their own Instagram accounts. I know plenty with websites, Facebook. Those things didn't exist. So the way that we thought of new motherhood as being lonely and very important to just leave the house no matter what, even if it seems easier just to stay home, some of that experience has been replaced with a different kind of loneliness that comes from maybe watching your friends on Facebook, watching your friends on Instagram, and feeling like everybody else is a perfect mom. So we still really recommend that in-person, face-to-face experience as being invaluable, but some of the solutions to that same problem have come up, and they're very different.
So with the internet being everywhere,
mm-hmm.
do you find that you're connecting with people in the same sort of a way that you'd like to with the one-on-one connection, or does the distance or the ether change things?
I think for us as writers and publishers of our website, we're able to connect with more people more often. But my heart really goes out to the new moms who still need to get out of the house and still need to have a human connection, still need to see the actual sun on their face and not just the virtual sun. So we're happy to have a vibrant Facebook community, and we're happy to see moms going out and doing some of our Rookie Moms challenges and hashtagging us on Instagram. Like, that's exciting for us because we get maybe more of a view into their lives. But I still think it's just super important to, like, go out and make friends and nervously strike up a conversation with the next mom at a playground using a pickup line, you know, about the baby or her gear or her shoes or offering her a latte. Like, I think the in-person connection is just as important as it's ever been.
Mm-hmm. You know, you've seen also from a different perspective things that have changed in fatherhood over the time that you've been doing this. And you were just telling me on the way up into the studio that your husband is a superstar. I mean, how has that changed? You think that his superstar behavior would have been possible the same level of it 10 years ago?
Well, I don't mean to be too much of a fangirl, but we did read your books. And very early on in the pregnancy and in the first year of fatherhood, learning from you and your good ideas about how to be involved and, you know, when the mom is kind of going off the rails and you need to let her or how to support her. I think putting those ideas into his head early was helpful. I think for me, I'm a control freak. Some days I might think I'm a recovering control freak, but I recognized, again, from very early on that I need to leave the house and let them find their own way. Mm-hmm. That nobody really benefits if I'm watching and hoping he just does it my way. He needs the space to make his own mistakes and to fix those mistakes. And I feel like what maybe started when my oldest was a newborn and I went out for a pedicure and the baby got hungry and they just figured it out is now, like, I can leave town for 3 weeks and he can manage three children, including drop-offs, pickups, soccer practice, and a home remodel. And, oh, by the way, he works full-time. You know, so, like, he's awesome, and I know he's got it. And he'll, you know, we can, like, lean on each other, and then, you know, I won't say he loved every minute of it. In fact, he booked his own week-long work getaway before I even got back. And so, you know, we trade off.
That's fair.
And it's such a partnership, and I don't know if it wouldn't have been possible 10 years ago. I don't know if all people, even in our own country, feel that same support that parents can be equal partners like that. But among our friends, that's more the norm, and I'm so happy about it. He's such a good partner.
No, it's great that's going on. I think that, you know, we're on the coasts.
Yeah.
And it's probably a little bit different as you move towards the center of the country. I think there's a little bit less of the pushing of the gender role boundaries and things like that. But no, it's great. And I think what you're doing of the understanding that you want to have to just back off a little bit, and that the subtext is, you know, you wouldn't have got involved with him if he was a danger to children. So let him alone, let him do it. And yeah, he's going to make, you know, he'll do things differently than you do, but they're, you know, everybody's alive and healthy at the end of the day.
Well, when I came home, everyone was asleep. My flight landed after midnight, and I tiptoed around, and I was kissing everyone, and two of the boys had to share the guest room because of the construction project. And I looked at them, and I thought, oh, my God, this bed does not have sheets on it. And I, like, really had to just sit with that feeling. It's after midnight. I'm certainly not going to wake them up and put sheets on the bed. And I just felt, like, this anxiety, and then just figuring, like, it's really okay. If the bed does not have sheets, it's really okay. And then actually it did. So it was just me working myself over nothing.
Yeah, I tried to explain that to some people at one point that, you know, does it really matter if your kid wears two different socks or has a little oatmeal behind one ear? You know,
they're all going on today. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's all right. I'm talking with Heather Flett, who's the co-author with Whitney Moss of the Rookie Mom's Handbook and Stuff Every Mom Should Know. And also does RookieMoms.com. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll keep talking to Heather.
My mom is a hero. She goes into burning buildings. She finds people inside who need to be saved. And then she helps them get out. Even when she can't breathe or see. Even when she's a little scared. My mom is a firefighter. She does great things. And the best thing she can do, please come home.
The U.S. Fire Administration, a part of FEMA, reminds you to protect the heroes who protect our lives. Have a smoke alarm on every floor. Test it monthly. Replace the battery yearly. Do your part to get out before firefighters have to come in. The fact is, 60% of all fire deaths occur in a home without a working smoke alarm. The good news is, that's a fact that can change. For more information, visit the U.S. Fire Administration at www.usfa.fema.gov. Working for a fire-safe America.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Broad. If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Heather Flett, who's the co-author with Whitney Moss of the Rookie Mom's Handbook and Stuff Every Mom Should Know. Tell us a little bit more about the Facebook community that you were talking about and how people get to it and the kinds of community that it is.
Well, so our site's going to have its 10th birthday, but now we have nobody leaves comments anymore on web pages, at least very seldom. Unless you really screw up, then they're happy to chime in and tell you. But where we've really found the best dialogue with our readers is on our Facebook community. And if you go to facebook.com/rookiemoms,
there we go.
You'll find our dynamic and thriving Rookie Moms Facebook community. So we can ask lots of different questions and hear back what people are really thinking.
So what's one of the most bizarre questions that you've had come through?
Oh, that's a great question. You maybe needed to prepare me for that. I think the thing that people find funniest is the stuff that's universal. We put together a little graphic of the toddler's rules of possession. Like, if I see it, it's mine. If I touched it, it's mine. If you have it and I want it, it's mine. And people really liked that. So funny graphics do well. We also find questions that are really don't require a lot of thinking do well. Like, do you breastfeed? Lots of moms know the answer to that right away. So questions that are don't require too much thought are good among the sleep-deprived community we've assembled.
Are your parents around?
My mom is, and my dad has passed away.
Okay. So has your mom admired you from afar and kind of marveled at all this, the fancy technology? And kind of curious, like, what different generations think of parenting, because obviously the stuff that you're doing, not even possible, not even in a dream for your mom.
I don't think she totally understands it. I think she's proud of me, but I think she'd be proud of me without it. That's just her privilege
as
a mom.
Of course she would be, yeah.
Yeah, I would be surprised to learn that she follows us on Facebook or even if she's looked at my site, but she sure sends me a lot of ideas for it.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Are they good? I mean, are they good ideas?
Can I say no?
Of course
she probably
can.
Won't find this. It's kind of like what everyone's mom still forwards them. It's that kind of stuff.
Yeah. They're it's well-meaning, though.
She sent me something that said I was a beautiful and kind mother. If it was just that, that would have been great. And then I had to forward it to 12 people.
Oh, no.
Or something bad would happen. So thanks, Mom.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how old are your kids now?
My kids are 3.5, just turned 8, and about to turn 10.
About to turn 10.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So you started the thing right after the honeymoon was over.
Yeah, we started when my baby was 5 months old. And Whitney's baby at the time turned 1. Within the first 2 weeks of us having the site, and so we kicked him off. We said, he's not a rookie anymore. So we really had a narrow view of it's your first baby the first year. And since then, I believe our definition has grown to, oh, you're always a rookie. And we really do focus on the first years of parenthood and helping moms and dads adjust to that huge, huge transition of becoming parents. But in some sense, you're always a rookie.
So have the website. Did the Facebook page, and not going to tell to anybody any more than this particular detail, which is that you're starting to do a podcast. What's that going to be about?
So that's a great question. So we started the local website to really get down to specifics on where you can go to yoga with your baby or story time with your baby. And we wrote the books to be kind of the diaper bag friendly version of the website for people who aren't online. But there is a place where I think Whitney and I have so much fun talking with each other about current events, current trends in parenting, our challenges, and just kind of having fun with each other that doesn't feel appropriate for a site that's kind of aimed at new moms. So I think it lets us be a little bit more ourselves and a little bit less focused on new babies all the time.
Okay. Are you going to have guests on, or are you just going to be talking to each other?
We will have guests.
You will.
Do you want to be a guest?
Oh, I wasn't pitching for that.
Not trying to put you on the spot,
no,
but
sure, well, happy to. But no, I was just kind of curious if it's going to be focusing on the local stuff or if it's going to go beyond.
Not so much local, although a little bit of Quirkly might show up. There's always some interesting things happening in our neighborhoods that might be more of a mention than specifically focused on local.
So you go to some of the mom blogger conferences. How have you found those as far as community? Because I think it's with the dad bloggers, I'm not completely sure that we're quite as coalesced as the mom bloggers. And I've heard different things from different people in about the mom blogging, that there's this kind of great sisterhood, but there's also backstabbing and, you know, middle school girl behavior. What's your take on that?
Well, I think that's all true. Definitely what you're saying okay. is all true. I just returned from the Mom 2 Summit, and I loved it. I feel like those are my people. I learn so much every time. The conversations with the brands seem very positive, as well as the best thing I ever get from them is just reconnecting with different bloggers and meeting people face-to-face that I've maybe just read or emailed with before. So I get so much out of them, but that one in particular is a favorite. I've been going to the Blog Her conference since 2006, and that one's grown from like 200 bloggers around a swimming pool to like 10,000 bloggers taking over a skyscraper in Manhattan. So I think that, you know, that one's grown a little unwieldy in terms of getting a lot of like interpersonal connections. So but I do love them, and it's a great time to connect with people when my job is otherwise pretty solitary.
Oh, go ahead. Were you going to say more?
I was, but I forget.
Oh, I'm sure it was absolutely brilliant.
It was really the best thing I was about to say. Yeah.
Well, you'll have to have you come back again. But you know, one of the things in reading blogs, and I probably don't read as many as I should, there's kind of the advice ones, and then there's the really personal ones. Mm-hmm. And some of the personal ones, they just bother me.
Okay.
And not... And in kind of an odd way, it's like it just seems to be overly personal, that mm-hmm. some of this should be private stuff. Does that happen a lot in the mom community? I mean, I've interviewed some of the big mom bloggers, and some of them, you know, talking about drugs and drinking and stuff, which is has its place. But there are some that are telling, it's like they're telling stories that aren't really theirs to tell.
Mm. Okay, so our sites both tend to kind of err on the side of being resource sites or advice sites, to use your language, and we do tell stories, but we really try to keep it either something where the child is so young that it's not their story to tell, or something that won't embarrass them later. I think that we're really cautious of even complaining too much about some of the rigors of sleepless nights and newborn land. So that's where our lines are drawn. But I believe that some of the real personal bloggers are sharing such important stories that are helping a lot of people. So it wouldn't be comfortable for me, but I think that it's really brave and I think it's really cool. And it seems like some of the stories that they're telling, maybe in the past we would have had access to them only by kind of like a tell-all book, or maybe we wouldn't have access to them. So I think it is changing the way we communicate and the way that we understand other people's stories.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're struggling with some of those problems, and that now you can just Google problem that I have, and then you can find
so
many other stories, that I think it immediately connects us and makes us feel less alone. But I think, to my earlier point, like, you still need to leave the house. You still need real life friends.
Yeah, no, that's a good thing. So we only have just about a minute or so left, but what would you suggest to somebody who is a rookie mom, who's thinking, you know, I've got all these ideas and this story's running around in my head. How would you suggest that she start blogging? Or would you suggest that she starts kind of getting connected with your Facebook community and then figure out if she really wants to go that way?
I think the internet is forever. And if you have a lot of stories or pain or questions or need for connection, my answer would be different for each of those scenarios. There are some really wonderful kind of private Facebook groups where you can maybe connect with other people in your same position. There's Baby Center has message boards, mm-hmm. and those are going to be kind of more helpful advice for like the stage of life you're experiencing. I don't know. I don't think I would necessarily tell someone to start a blog unless they really felt strongly that that's what they needed to do, and then I could help them out from there.
Okay. Well, they'll be able to get a hold of you through the website rookiemoms.com or 510families.com if you happen to be in the Bay Area, and look for their books, Rookie Mom's Handbook and also Stuff Every Mom Should Know, that we co-written with Whitney Moss. Heather Flett, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Positive Parenting. You can get more information on today's show and what we're working on in the weeks ahead at MrDad.com. While you're there, visit the MrDad.com gift shop with everything you need to help you become the dad or mom you want to be. Positive Parenting is a production of the MrDad.com radio network. Now, go be a great parent.